This is URN Sport.
I bloody love football.
Hello and welcome to another episode of URN Sport's Big Monday Night In podcast. It feels good after last week's fiasco, really, talking about the European Super League, to actually be back discussing some Premier League action. And of course, we will discuss the Carabao Cup final between Manchester City and Tottenham Hotspur later in the programme. And to help us do that this evening, delighted to be joined by Alex and Kieran. Kieran, who has a brand new podcast out today as well, the latest episode of Chatting Like Champions, in which himself and Pavan go into great depth about the European Super League. If you missed any of our coverage about that, then you can listen to last week's Big Monday Night In via Spotify, or also watch it back via our Facebook pages at URN Sport as well. But let's dive into the Premier League. I'm sure we may touch upon the European Super League at some point towards the end of the programme. On Friday night, Kieran, Arsenal were beaten by 1-0 against Everton. A horrendous blunder from Bern Leno about 14 minutes from time was the difference between the two teams. It's the first win for the Toffees away at Arsenal since 1996, their first ever win at the Emirates. And Carlo Ancelotti this season has recorded away wins at Tottenham, Arsenal, Leicester City, Leeds United and Liverpool. The best away form I've experienced as an Evertonian. What do you put that down to? What's been the secret to Everton's impressive form on the travels?
I think Ancelotti is an incredible man manager, and any team that he goes to, always he seems to lift the team, no matter who they are. He's just an incredible manager, to be honest. I think that's definitely helped. He's kept the team kind of consistent throughout the season as well. There hasn't been too much chopping and changing. And obviously, for a league season, that is very important, because you keep the you just keep the consistency going, and that's obviously a very important thing throughout an entire league campaign. So I think also getting obviously the big games away, getting those results, picking up those points has obviously just propelled you up the table. You're doing a lot better than I've also seen in like recent years as well. So.
Yeah, I think for me, as an Everton fan, I've said this on multiple occasions, whether it be on podcasts or in pubs over the last 12 to 18 months or so, even further back probably, is that Everton's problem has always been on their travels. You don't back them away from home. Whereas this season, the issue has really been at Goodison Park. And I think the lack of supporters certainly has helped Everton on the road. But Ancelotti, like you say, he seems to have a plan for every single match that we play. And away from home, it's worked. Albeit on Friday, we were extremely fortunate with the own goal from Bern Leno. You have to take that opportunity when it comes your way. And Everton certainly did that. Conversely, Alex, Arsenal, really, really poor again. And with Leeds and Villa's games in hand, on the Gunners, it's going to be a struggle for them to finish in the top 10, I think. Where do you stand on Arteta? Because obviously you boys co-host shows, co-host podcasts with two massive Arsenal fans, so we don't necessarily get to hear your say on events at the Emirates Stadium. But what's your opinion on Mikel Arteta, Alex? Is it a project worthy of patience, or do you think a change at the end of the season is required?
The only situation, I think, where I could kind of condone a change would be if, you know, Arsenal could get a really kind of top-level manager in, someone with a lot of experience. And I've always kind of suggested someone of kind of Max Allegri's level, although kind of Benji disagrees with that. My view on Arteta is, I think tactically he is actually a really intelligent manager. And I think that's shown quite well in a lot of individual games. If you look against, you know, Chelsea in the FA Cup final last season, I very much felt Arsenal were the underdogs there. Arteta got it absolutely right. And, you know, there's a reason why he's beaten Jurgen Klopp. There's a reason why he's beaten Pep Guardiola before. Like, I think in individual games, he's a really good manager. And that's why I actually think Arsenal could go on and win the Europa League this season, because of kind of Arteta's tactical intelligence. But I think what he's struggling with is implementing a long-term system. He's clearly got ideas that he's trying to get across, but I look at the way Arsenal play consistently in the league, and, you know, I think that is the reason why they're so low down in the table. you know, when they defend well, it's almost like they compromise their attack. When they try and attack, it's like they compromise their defending. They struggle in creativity. I don't think Arteta knows their best defence. I don't think he knows their best attack. They have a goalkeeper who's really struggling for form at the moment. So there's a lot of difficulties there. And the question is how much of it can be attributed to Arteta. And I know in some games he's kind of made poor decisions in terms of substitutions and stuff like that. I would personally give him time. I genuinely think not many managers, as I said, other than someone of kind of Max Allegri's quality, would be doing much better in this kind of situation. But then if Arsenal don't win the Europa League this season and finish potentially below Leeds, below Villa, outside of the top 10, as you said, you know, a club of Arsenal's size, that would be a disastrous season. I think so much of it hinges on the Europa League.
No, I completely agree. I think those wins in individual matches obviously gives you confidence that Arteta can deliver. But over the course of the season, the Gunners haven't been good enough. Simple as that. So it makes you wonder whether he has got the nous and he's got the ability to carry them forward. I do think one thing we have to bear in mind is this is Arteta's first full season in charge. So with experience, he could improve. But at this moment in time, it's not looking good for him or the Gunners. Kieran, what's your take on the situation regarding Mikel Arteta?
I think, obviously, when we were speaking to Michal Khan in our episode, I kind of touched on it a little bit there. I said that Arteta obviously has a bit of sympathy from the fan base because of him being an ex-player and everything. I think that, yeah, fair enough, that goes a degree of the way to kind of not letting him off, but then giving him a bit more time. I think personally, it hinges on the Europa League, to be honest, this season. If as Alex said, if they don't win that or they go out to Unai Emery's Villarreal, that's just a complete failure, to be honest. A club of that size finishing below the likes of Leeds, West Ham, like, it just shouldn't be happening. But I suppose that's the Premier League for you. But I think give him time and he will come good. But it's just how patient the fans are going to be and the owners, which is obviously another side of the coin. It depends if a new owner does eventually come in and whether they want to bring in a new manager or not as well.
Absolutely. Of course, there is talk today that Arsenal are subject to a bid from some very wealthy individuals indeed, some connected to club legends like Dennis Bergkamp and Thierry Henry as well, the latter who's been inducted into the Premier League's Hall of Fame this morning as well, alongside all-time leading goal scorer Mr. Alan Shearer. Moving on to Saturday's game, I'm sorry to do this to you, Alex, but a 95th minute equaliser from Joe Willock grabbed Newcastle a last gasp point at the home of the champions. Jurgen Klopp, Alex, said after the game that Liverpool must learn or they don't play Champions League football next season. What exactly is it that they need to learn? And why, come April, is he asking his side to learn such important kind of lessons? Why are we still having this conversation?
It's such a kind of difficult one, really. I mean, I'm still trying to explain kind of what's gone so wrong this season comparatively to the last two or three years. And I think it's a number of things, really. I feel when I come on the big Monday night in, I'm kind of repeating myself a lot of the time. But that's the problem. I think we're just susceptible to the same kind of mistakes. I mean, we're not particularly clinical, which is really frustrating. I mean, I feel like we have a bad fan here. I didn't actually watch the game live because I was traveling in my car, but I watched the highlights and listened to it, and it just felt like we were we were dominating in the first half, and then we did what we did so many times this season and let the other side back into the game. We struggled against the low block again. Like, it sounds like Martin Dubravka had a very good game, but again, it just seems like a lot of goalkeepers do particularly well against us, and then you have to question our forwards and our finishing. And, you know, obviously Mo Salah scored, which was a good sign, but it sounds like he missed quite a few chances as well. And again, it's this point about kind of regenerating the front three. But, you know, it's I really hate questioning Jurgen Klopp. Like, for the last couple of years, I've kind of been comfortable enough in the fact to just trust Jurgen Klopp on his team selection and stuff like that. But, you know, Thiago had a really good game and he was taken off for Curtis Jones, who's just come back from injury. And Jeannie Wijnaldum, who's been, for me, really, really ineffective in the last kind of month or so, stayed on the pitch. And Fabinho, you know, moved back into defensive midfield and we had an upturn in form. And then he was playing at the back again with Ozan Kabak when we had Ben Davis available. We had Rhys Williams, who may be a bit younger, but at least they're out and out centre-backs. And that's been a problem, not having Fabinho in midfield. It's plainly clear. So I don't know if Klopp did that in a way by, you know, underestimating Newcastle, but ultimately if we did that, you know, it was a bad mistake, and we let them in. You know, they obviously had the disallowed goal, and then Joe Willock eventually scored, you know, obviously doing very well. I think that is probably a positive for Arsenal fans, how well he's done at Newcastle. But, you know, to not beat Newcastle this season, to not beat Fulham this season, that there's a number of other teams I can mention, I think Brighton as well, like, it's just, sorry, no offense, Kieran, but but you know, a team like Liverpool, we should be beating these smaller teams, and it's just a really frustrating one to take. Like, I just don't think we deserve the Champions League this season. I think, like, we deserve to finish outside the top four, and I know that's quite negative as a fan, but I think we can regenerate. I think we've got the quality too. I still trust the manager, but it's just been a poor season, to be honest.
No, I completely agree. And that point you make about not deserving the Champions League, it's something that I've seen banded around social media over the last couple of days. If Liverpool can't get over the line against Newcastle, against Brighton, against Fulham, against Burnley, even against Everton in two matches, then, you know, it's certainly not the credentials of a top four side. I do expect them, after a busy summer, not necessarily a big summer in terms of recruitment, but a busy summer, I do expect Liverpool to come back, but it does feel like a regeneration of sorts may be required in certain areas of the pitch. Moving on to the late game, on Saturday evening, West Ham 0, Chelsea 1, Timo Werner tapping just before half-time, giving the Blues all 3 points. Kieran, they look nailed on to finish in the top four now to Chelsea, in addition, of course, to a Champions League semi-final and an FA Cup final. Is it fair to say Tuchel has completely vindicated the sacking of Frank Lampard? His kind of time at the bridge thus far proves that all those months ago where we spoke on this podcast about how, you know, ridiculous a decision it was, how unfair a decision it was, he's proved that it was the right call.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Looking back at it now, looking at how they played under Lampard, Tuchel, Lampard, you could argue, had more. He had nicer looking football, but it wasn't getting the results they needed. And for a team like Chelsea, it's a results business. If they're not getting the results, ultimately their season goes down as a failure. And the fact that they're in a Champions League semi-final, looking like they're going to get a Champions League spot for next season, and they're still in the FA Cup, like it's a good season. Like, I think any top club would take that, because at the end of the day, it's not pretty football, but it's getting the job done, and they're not conceding many goals at all. I think, like, most of his games against top managers, he hasn't conceded in. So it's been quite an impressive starting campaign for him, to be honest.
No, I completely agree. They're extremely effective, both in terms of the results and in terms of the performances. Alex, I'll turn to you on this one. West Ham were really aggrieved by sending off with the last 10 minutes to go Fabian Balbuena. Now, the incident was essentially Balbuena was clearing the ball. And as he did so, he's kind of left his foot out, collided with a Chelsea player. Studs were up and the referee sent him off. Extremely harsh. David Moyes after the match said the referee that made the decision, his name eludes me, said that he clearly has never played the game of football before to give that as a red card. It was widely kind of condemned across social media, that decision. On a wider point, I mean, you've been quite critical on the group chat and in previous podcasts about the standard of officiating in this country. Incidents like that, they really support your point that there needs to be kind of massive improvements and changes to how games are refereed. Forget VAR for 1 minute, but about the man in the middle of the pitch, things have certainly got to improve.
Yeah, I mean, I think David Moyes, firstly on the decision, I did look at it, and I think David Moyes is absolutely right. Yes, the studs are raised, but if you look at it in real time and in slow motion, a big part of those kind of fouls where a red card is usually given is kind of the force. If the force is reckless and dangerous, and, you know, I don't see how that was, because I think it was Ben Chilwell, the player who was fouled in the instant, but Balbuena cleared the ball. It was a coming together that, you know, you can see when a red card tackle's really bad, because usually the foot's high and there's force. And I just thought it was another poor decision. And yeah, I've just I know I've been quite sort of animated on the group chat and that's on this issue, but I just genuinely believe that, you know, where managers can actually do pretty well sometimes and have good seasons, but just because of the standards be sacked. I just think there's not enough kind of, there's no system in place to kind of judge referees in the same way that players and managers are judged. But I think that's really bad. If the Premier League is to be considered kind of the best league in the world with the most money and the best systems. And I'm personally of the opinion that VAR is not a problem. It's how it's been used and kind of a lack of clarity in the rules and the personnel. So I think it's a really interesting debate, but, you know, at the end of the season, I really think there needs to be some kind of major review. But just quickly on Chelsea as well, it was another impressive win. I think the fact that Timo Werner is Chelsea's top goal scorer and top assister, and he's still considered to have had a pretty poor season, is impressive. And I've just been very impressed by Tuchel so far. Like, I genuinely think people are saying it's kind of like a Di Matteo effect, but I think that's kind of underrating Tuchel in a way, because Tuchel's a very kind of tactically astute manager. He's got the job done in a lot of different ways at Chelsea. And I genuinely don't know, you know, if Chelsea get past Real Madrid in the Champions League, I could see Tuchel tactically outsmarting both Guardiola and Pochettino. I've really favoured him.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next few weeks and months, not only for Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea, but how the standard of refereeing changes in this country, because I completely agree, and I think Kieran does too, that things have got to improve because it's a really poor, low standard at this present moment in time. Kieran, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to turn to you briefly about this one, the late game on Saturday night. Sheffield United 1, Brighton and Hove Albion 0. I'm only going to dwell on this one quickly because I'm sure you don't want to talk about it for too long. You're 7 points clear of the relegation zone with 5 games to go. It's very much in your own hands, safety and survival in the Premier League for another season. Are you concerned based on what you saw on Saturday night, or do you think Brighton are just going to get over the line?
I'm still not comfortable. Can't say I ever am when we're not mathematically safe, because there's always that possibility that we could go down, and I know that would be the most Brighton thing ever. Mm. But I think that game specifically, we were playing like we were safe, and ultimately that's going to cause us to become complacent, and then we're going to give away silly chances like we did when they scored. That was just a mix-up in defending. I think we missed Ben White. He's one of our most underrated players, I think. He just brings a calmness at the back. He's faster than, I think it was Adam Webster who made that mistake, and he would have made up the ground and ultimately stopped that goal from happening. But I don't want to read too much into that performance. I really hope it was just a one-off, because our levels throughout the season have consistently been quite high, although we have struggled against teams that put in a low block. And credit has to go to Sheffield. They were very organised, and we really struggled to break them down. And we changed our formation, and before it looked like our wide players were completely isolated. And that was an obvious tactical decision by Sheffield's manager. Like, he completely outsmarted Potter in that game. It was good to see Jose Izquierdo back on the pitch, though. Obviously, he's back after, I think it's nearly 2 years now. So it was good to see him back. And Alireza Yohanbach also had a very good game after he's been given a lot of stick by Brighton fans. But as I said, don't want to read too much into it. Hopefully we pick up a point or two, and then I will say that I'm pretty confident that we're safe then.
From one shock result to another now, Molineux on Sunday afternoon, where Wolves were absolutely battered by 4-0. against Sean Dyche's Burnley. A breathtaking performance from the Claretts. First half hat-trick from Chris Wood. They're 9 points clear of the relegation zone. We've talked about Burnley at length on this podcast in recent weeks, praising how well Sean Dyche has done in difficult circumstances, but also stressed the need for their new owners to really invest quite heavily in the summer if Burnley are to get back in contention for Europe like they were a few years ago. But Wolves, Alex, they have been, for the most part of this season, absolutely dreadful. Why is that the case and how do they fix it going forwards?
I think the easy answer is kind of personnel not being replaced particularly effectively. And, you know, the three players who can really be pointed to, obviously two players that left in the summer, Diogo Jota and Matt Doherty, and then also Raul Jimenez, which of course isn't entirely Wolves' fault at all. Of course, he had that horrible injury this season. But I think Nuno struggled to adapt without him. I think that shows kind of how key those three players were. I mean, remember last season, the season before, Matt Doherty had a really kind of integral role in the way Wolves attacked with that kind of delayed run into the box from right wing back. And he was a very difficult player to pick up, as why he contributed quite well in goals and assists. And I just think while Nelson Semedo is a good right back, I think he's kind of struggled to replicate that in terms of the style of play. I mean, Diogo Jota has been fantastic at Liverpool. And I just think, you know, again, has left a gap there. And while Pedro Neto has been good, Daniel Podence has been good at points, but struggled with injury. Again, it's like Wolves have just struggled to replace them. And, you know, a lot of people have talked about Fabio Silva as kind of the long-term replacement for Raul Jimenez, but that was always a huge risk to spend £40 million nearly on an 18-year-old. And although kind of the indications are there, he's not going to score as many goals and contribute the same way that Raul Jimenez has. So I think it's a combination of that. And I also think kind of, you know, the system that Nuno Espirito Santo used in the Championship and has used in the last couple of seasons in the Premier League, it's just not worked as well. There's been a lot of switching between a back three and a back four. You know, I think Adama Traore had a particularly poor season, certainly in front of goal. So it's just been really poor. Like, I'm surprised that there's kind of not that much pressure seemingly on Nuno, because I genuinely think, like, with the group of players he has, with the signings that were made in the summer, you know, 45 million on Nelson Semedo, big money came in for Fabio Silva. You know, they spent like 40 million, I think, on Kijana Hoover as well. He's barely featured. It just all seems very, very disappointing. It'll be very interesting to see what really happens in the summer, both in terms of players leaving the club, joining the club, and potentially the manager.
Disappointing, I think, is the best way to sum it up there, Alex. They have been really frustrating and underwhelming to watch this season. And even in games that they've won or they've picked up points, hasn't been a breathtaking performance from them. Certainly not the style of football that we attribute to that Wolves team of the last two Premier League campaigns. Sandwiched in between that game was Leeds 0, Manchester United 0. Look, we're not going to talk about this one because it was absolutely dreadful. However, the one positive I would say is it does show how far Leeds have come, because it's not that long ago since they went to Old Trafford, and despite being brave and created chances, they were on the end of a horrendous scoreline against their great rivals. But they're now starting to show a little bit more maturity, I think, in those big games, having won away at Manchester City, drew against Liverpool a few games ago, and of course have now picked up a point against a good Manchester United team at Elland Road. So positive sides for Marcelo Bielsa's team. The late game, before we get into the League Cup final, last night, a last-minute equaliser for Keenan Davis, Kieran, secured Aston Villa a point against their West Midlands rivals, West Bromwich Albion. Villa have flirted with Europe for quite a lot of this season, but since they've lost Jack Grealish, their form has really, really dipped. If they want to be in the conversation for European football again next season, what kind of areas do you think they need to strengthen in?
I think, firstly, that shows how integral Jack Grealish is to this team. If they do lose him, I don't see them being anywhere near challenging for Europe next season, because ultimately, the fact that they've been that close came from their very strong start that they had. In terms of strengthening, that's kind of a difficult question, because their squad as a whole is fairly strong. It's just whether it's in the same bracket as the teams that do challenge for Europe. I think they're a very solid mid-table side, definitely. I think Europe might be a step too far for him. Obviously, Ollie Watkins has been very good for him ever since he came in. The likes of John McGinn has also been playing quite well for him this season. Ross Barkley and Douglas Luiz have looked pretty decent in the midfield as well. So I don't think their midfield needs to really be shored up too much. Maybe they could look at their defence, because I don't rate Tyrone Mings too much. I think he's a bit of a liability sometimes. He has good games, but he just doesn't seem to be too consistent with his like top performances. Emi Martinez has obviously been very good for him. There's only so much a goalkeeper can do when they're facing so many shots. So I think maybe they need to just shore up their defence next season to really solidify that push for Europe.
And on the flip side, Alex, West Brom, they now require, I should say, 9 points from their last five. It's going to be really, really difficult for them. You know, some might say it's virtually impossible for them to stay up, despite Sam Allardyce's, reputation as being a relegation specialist. The question I wanted to ask you, regardless of where the baggies end up next season, do you see the big man staying around, or do you think this could be the last time we see Sam Allardyce as a manager, not only at the elite level of English football, but just in football generally?
It's a really, really difficult one, isn't it? Because I think, you know, there's that kind of perception of the traditional defensive British manager, your Alan Pardew's, your Tony Pulis's, Allardyce is probably the king of them, and then managers like Mark Hughes as well, and it seems that they've generally been kind of phased out of the Premier League, with perhaps the exception of Sean Dyche and Burnley, and potentially you could argue David Moyes is in there. It's a shame in a way, because I've been weirdly impressed with West Brom recently, certainly in the last few games. I don't think they're going to get out of trouble. And I know Sam Allardyce has such a great reputation in this kind of position, but, you know, I think they've kind of left it too late. I really can't see any major change really happening now with the bottom three. Of course, Sheffield United already relegated, but can't see Fulham or West Brom kind of getting out of it. I don't think there's going to be kind of any great escape. And, you know, could I see Allardyce staying? I mean, what I could see Allardyce doing is like leaving a game before they're officially relegated to preserve the record or something. But, yeah, I don't know. Because, you know, notoriously, particularly in the 2010s, like Sam Allardyce has not stuck around. Of course, he probably would have done a very good job at Sunderland had he not got the England job. I think it was that summer in 2016. Didn't really stick around at Palace, didn't stick around at Everton. He was at Crystal Palace, wasn't he?
He was.
I was just double checking that. But yeah, he's not a healthy long-term strategy with the style of football. I think the intensity he demands, because he's often brought in these kind of situations. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with West Brom, like what kind of direction they go in, you know, manager-wise. I think there's actually a pretty good crop of players there. And I think it depends really if they keep hold of guys like Mateus Pereira, and of course, Johnston, the goalkeeper. But, you know, it's a bit of a shame, really. I think Sam Allardyce is a very good manager. I think this is just a job beyond him at the moment.
I think the problem that West Brom had is in those initial matches when Sam Allardyce took over, he didn't get the results that were required. They needed that early managerial bounce and kind of that rejuvenation in terms of their form and performances. It only came towards the back end of the season when kind of the damage had already been done. As we approach the last 5 minutes or so of the pod, I'll get the panel's opinions on arguably the big game of the weekend, the League Cup final between Manchester City and Tottenham. Wasn't a fantastic match. I mean, the best element to it was the fact that supporters were back in Wembley, which was, of course, great to see. A Laporte header with less than 10 minutes to go, giving City their fourth straight League Cup trophy. Kieran, I'll turn to you about Manchester City, and then Alex, I'll get your thoughts on Tottenham. There were lots of criticisms of Spurs' approach going into the game, saying they didn't lay a glove on Manchester City, essentially. But could anyone have given that City team a game? And, you know, quite generally, is there any club particularly in this country, that can give them a game at this moment in time, because they seem to be not only on a different level, but on a different planet to everyone else.
I think the only team that could probably come close, and this comes down more to tactical awareness of the manager and players, is maybe Chelsea at the moment. But just because Tuchel does seem to be getting that Chelsea team playing very well. But whether it's to the standards of Guardiola, I suppose we'll only find that out if they do face off in the Champions League final, which would be a cracker of a game if that does happen. But obviously there was a bit of controversy about whether Laporte should have actually still been on the pitch when he scored, because he should have been booked for that first challenge. And I agree with that. And then obviously he eventually did get the yellow card for the second one. But I don't think it was City's best game. This definitely wasn't their best game, because City at the top of their game could hammer this Spurs side. And that's no discredit to this Spurs team, because they're not the best Spurs team we've seen in recent times, but they're not up to the levels of City. But then I don't think many teams are, to be honest.
No, I completely agree with you. And on Tottenham, Alex, obviously dismissed Jose Mourinho in the days leading up to this final. Firstly, what were your thoughts on that decision? Was that the right call, given the magnitude of this match? And what does the future hold for them now? Who is their salvation in the summer? Who would you turn to if you were Daniel Levy to turn the fortunes of a club that considered themselves to be in the big six, based on European Super League news last week? Who would you bring in to turn this round?
I genuinely think Spurs are potentially in the most hopeless position at the moment in the top six, despite being higher up in the league than Arsenal. I think it was always going to end pretty badly with Jose Mourinho at Spurs, but sacking him a week before a Champions League final, I know there were rumours about the fact he'd get a bigger payoff if they won that League Cup. But did I say Champions League final? I meant League Cup.
You did, yeah, right? Yeah. It's not that big, Alex. I know the Carabao means a lot to you.
Probably shouldn't have mixed those two up, but but yeah, it just seemed like such a bizarre decision, considering Jose Mourinho has done impressive things against Pep Guardiola in the past. Like, you know, the League Cup isn't the biggest trophy, but for a club like Spurs, who haven't won a trophy in coming up to 12 years now, they have players like Harry Kane, Heung-Min Son, Toby Alderweireld, who are kind of criminally underrated in terms of the number of trophies that they should have won compared to what they have won. I mean, surely Spurs could have just taken the financial hit if it meant they were going to have a bigger chance of winning the League Cup. Like, if I was a Spurs fan, I would be absolutely appalled at that decision. And is it really a huge difference between sacking Mourinho now and reviewing his position at the end of the season? I mean, they obviously fell out of the title race, but they were in an okay position to try and get into the top four. Like, obviously, there's been poor moments this season, but I think people forget how well kind of Harry Kane played under Jose Mourinho. And there have been good moments under him. So I just really thought it was a bizarre decision. And they've gone on to no surprises, you know, lose the League Cup final and continue the trophy drought. In terms of a successor, I mean, this is a really difficult one, because the likes of Nagelsmann, Brendan Rodgers have been linked, but you have to question, would they leave their respective clubs? It looks like Nagelsmann's going to go to Bayern anyway. Wouldn't see why Brendan Rodgers would leave Leicester for Spurs at the moment. So I think you're kind of looking to either a manager of a kind of a much smaller club than Spurs, or kind of an out of job manager. And I actually think someone who could be particularly effective, the two names for me that came to mind, I might get laughed at for both of them, but I will try and explain it. But I think actually Maurizio Sarri wouldn't be a bad appointment for Spurs. I don't know if it's a particularly long-term appointment, but, you know, he does have a positive style of play. I think he was pretty underrated at the fact he won a title with that Juventus side and, you know, won the Europa League with Chelsea, did very well at Napoli as well. I think his only real problem is the fact he's quite conservative and maybe unwilling to change his tactics sometimes. But I think for this Spurs team, for the kind of personnel they have, I think they do benefit from an attacking style of play. And then the other kind of manager I'd potentially think of, it's a bit of a left field one, but it would be potentially a Graham Potter or an Eddie Howe. But I think, you know, both of those managers are really, really impressive. But you have to question, you know, Jose Mourinho was brought in to win trophies, and he's been sacked, and it's just another rebuild. So I'd probably go Sarri.
Absolutely. Well, some interesting names thrown into the mix there by Alex. We're going to be fascinated to see who takes the job at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. There is a late game tonight between Leicester and Crystal Palace. I think we can all agree that Leicester are probably the favourites for that one, and we would expect the Foxes to win. Big thanks to Kieran and Alex for joining me on this week's edition of the Big Monday Night In. Stay tuned to Your Own Sport. We're back with the Sports Centre tomorrow night on yourown1350.net between 6 and 7. Catch us then. Catch our podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. And have a fantastic week.